Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. This is the Hoops HD Report and Championship Week Video Notebook Day One Combo Show. We got everything.
It's a combo show.
It's a combo show.
When was the last time we did a combo show? Oh, yeah, we did. I think we did one back in November. Remember, like, we combined Under the Radar and because we were only one game into the year or something like
okay,
that.
Okay, I don't remember that, but go back and find it if you want. But I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by Joby Fortson, David Griggs, John Titel. We think John Sleek will be joining us here in a few minutes as well. But we got a lot to get to here. We're going to be going over all the news and notes from the major conferences. At the end of the show, we'll be taking a look at the conference tournament action for Monday night, as well as what's upcoming on Tuesday night. And a few other things to do, but I like to start these Hoops HD reports out with a little blind resume. So I think we should start there again.
Not another blind resume.
Jeez. No, not another blind resume.
Well, no, I did one last week, and you all poo-pooed it.
Well, David, you had Nebraska compared to Duke.
Yeah, and we picked Nebraska.
No, we didn't. do we see the blind resume coming up here on the screen? It should be right there right about now.
Yeah. So these are nuts.
And there it is. Without sitting here and guessing the teams, but just look at these resumes. Titel, let me start with you. We've got the team on the left with a lot of wins, mostly quadrant two, a lot more quadrant two wins than the team on the right. And the team on the right having a few quadrant three losses. But your thoughts on these two and who's better?
So a couple of things as we get going here. We see that could be the most tier two wins I've seen of any team this year. That's an amazing number of wins. Not too much bad on the resume for the team on the left. And the fact that they are playing the number four team at home on Saturday is a good indicator that they're from a pretty good conference. Mm-hmm. On the right, you'll notice a couple of things. One, the non-conference strength of schedule is one of the best in the nation. Number two, they have a pair of crappy games left to finish off their conference season. Number three, a couple of tier three losses is a little bad on the resume. So I think we on the left, we have a power conference team. And on the right, we have I'll go with mid-major team.
Okay, but which resume do you like better, just looking at this?
So based on the fact that there's a little more bad on the right and a lot more of tier two goodness on the left, I would defer to the team on the left.
On the left. David, you agree with that, the team on the left?
The team on the right definitely tops out a little higher. I don't know who the one on the left is, but I'm pretty sure I know the one on the right. I know you say not to guess it, but when you look at these and you pore over them, and I just did my brilliant bracket today that – you kind of can't help but know who it is.
And Joby, your JNG rating is like the team on the left a lot better here if you look at those numbers.
Yeah, I go with the left, and the reason why is John T. The tier two just depth, you know, some neutral and road. It's just mixed in. Plus, notice that the tier on the right, while scoring margin isn't everything, I think a result matters. It's 1.1 point for your tier two, one wins, and one of them is 74. That's a weak tier one win. Yeah. So yeah, this is kind of a one hit wonder a little bit on the right to a degree.
Well, we may lose the screen here for a second or get a little replay or something, but I'm trying to.
I think I know who the one on the left is.
Yeah, too. The one on the left is the Auburn Tigers.
Oh,
the right, the VCU Rams.
David hates.
Yeah.
David, have I changed your mind about Auburn yet with this blind resume test?
I said I liked the one on the right. okay. I actually had VCU ranked ahead of Auburn in my pool today. Like
by two seed lines, yes.
By two seed lines. The one on the – I thought it was going to be Florida. Okay. I did. When I said I think I know the one on the left. But, no, like to Auburn's credit, they did – play and beat a team that's solidly in the field, and one is infinitely more than zero. A week ago they had zero. On Friday they have zero. Now they have one. I do like them a little better, but I still had them on the 11 line. I thought it would be higher, but there is something there to point to now, whereas before there really wasn't.
I think you've had Auburn in all season. I think like in the 8-9 range, if I'm correct.
I had them 8 in the bracket I published yesterday. I'm actually going to bump them up to a 7 very soon because, as you can see, their signature win happened over the weekend, albeit only 5 points, and Mississippi State is not like a top-5 team or anything, but they seem to be peaking at the right time. The Alabama game, they better not.
Yeah. If this is their peak, Whoa, point
this this is the wrong time to play your top rival on the road and an Alabama team that's desperate for a win, too.
Yeah. Well,
John T., I hope you're right, because the J&G has him as a 7 and has VCU as a 10, which is probably about what you have, right?
To Chad's point, yes, but to Chad's point, so the Alabama game after your signature win and then Tennessee coming in on Saturday, that is all the makings of a trap game, except for, as Chad points out, you don't have a trap game against your arch rival, but right. For the Iron Bowl.
That they care more about beating number 54 than number 4.
Probably.
I mean, plain and simple.
Well, I mean, their coach did coach at Tennessee. He might be a little up for that. They did fire him after he crashed them into the mountain for violations.
Let's take a look at the whole SEC standings here, in fact. And we had the big rematch over the weekend, once again, Tennessee, Kentucky, and once again, it was not much of a contest. So this time, Joby, the other way around, though.
Yeah, I mean, how about Tennessee? Because I had moved Kentucky ahead of Tennessee on my personal boards, and now I think there's a strong argument because Tennessee's ahead of them in the standings and dominated them in the most recent fashion that things reset where they are. It's clear that between Tennessee, I think we'll talk in the ACC in a similar fashion. I think we're seeing Tennessee or Kentucky will be a one at the end of the day, assuming they don't screw up in an unforeseen fashion, but I doubt both will. So it's going to be it is a TBD on that, and it's going to be a lot of fun watching the SEC down the stretch.
Right. I had Kentucky as a one. I also did today, although I had Tennessee right behind them as a 5. But if you pull them up, Chad, I just think I know that it was a lopsided loss, and that isn't to be ignored. But even factoring that in, I just think Kentucky's done a little bit more. Now, they haven't done so much more to where if they play each other again in the conference tournament final and Tennessee wins, that I don't think that Tennessee would jump over them. But two really good profiles here. I think Tennessee's best win is better than Kentucky's win. But, I mean, North Carolina neutral pretty good. At Auburn good at home. Louisville's good at home. Florida's good at home. Mississippi State's good at home. Mm-hmm. Those are some pretty big wins. And I know Tennessee has a lot of the similar ones, but – what tipped me was Kentucky beat Louisville at Louisville more handily than Tennessee did on a neutral floor.
Well, Tytel, are we all forgetting about one other team here in the SEC? What about LSU, who actually would have been the number one seed in the conference tournament if it started today?
I was going to tell Joby to slow down there because LSU already has Tennessee and Kentucky in their tier one column. If they beat one of them in the semis and one of them in the finals, I think you better give – strong consideration as the last one seed to that team.
There's
two things on there that you typically don't see a one seed have, and that's losses outside to teams outside the bubble, two of them.
Right. But I was going to say, I don't think there's a path to LSU playing Kentucky and Tennessee because they should be in the one seed. And
2 and 3 will play.
And Kentucky and Tennessee will be the 2 and 3
if LSU
wins these last two games. If they lose one of those last two games, they don't have a path to one seed because of the loss. So, but what about the team that LSU does have coming up next? Joby, shocking loss to Georgia by Florida, team that had been playing so well.
Just when I was getting – I mean, Florida, you know, Tytel knows this. Florida is maybe my most frustrating team of anybody in the country because
Florida's not as good at home as I thought. Wow.
When they got their record settled, because remember, they were 500 basically entering conference play, or at least close to 500, very miserable out of conference, but they played good teams. And then they did well in conference. I go, okay, this is the Florida team everybody talked about preseason. Yeah, they could even maybe wear white. Yeah. And then blam, forget that, Georgia. They're still in, but you get what I'm saying.
Well, you're saying they're in, but Tytel, they lose these. They got LSU and Kentucky their last two regular season games. If they maybe pick up one in the SEC tournament, you're now looking at an 18-15 team, aren't you?
Yes, and it's going to be a struggle if that scenario works out. The LSU win, they're hanging their whole hat on that, and they're all three tier one wins are on the road, which is something. Obviously, LSU has tier one wins, home, road, neutral, whatever. But the fact that three tier one road wins, I think that is a big consideration for the committee.
Well, Again, when you talk about Tier 1, you're talking about 75 teams. That's the same difference between a 1 and a – that's a bigger difference between a 1 seed and a 10 seed. And Arkansas and Alabama are not the same as Kentucky, Mississippi State, Ole Miss. I mean, I just think that Tier 1 is still, while maybe not as vague as top 50, still – you still have to look at who those wins came against.
And Tier 2 has Ole Miss, which is presently in the field despite their mess-ups over recent
years. Well, I think at the end of the day, I think what Florida really needs to do is find a way to win one of these last two games, and then they can –
I think they're fine at 18-15. 17-15 might be a different story. I think they're fine at 18-15 because the bubble stinks so bad. Maybe the mid thief. They're ahead of Lipscomb.
But 18-15, you're talking about a loss to an Arkansas or a Texas A&M in the SEC tournament, and that I can't.
No. 18-15. They're 17.
17-15. Okay.
So they beat the Arkansas. They beat the Arkansas, but then they lose to one of the Mississippi schools. I don't know the bracket by memory, but a team like that. I think they're still in at that point because of the – you're comparing them against, you know, NC State who loses out, or Clemson, or Belmont with Lipscomb who lose in their conference tournament. I like Florida probably, let's see the resume, in that scenario.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, we got to keep things rolling here. Here's the upcoming schedule in the SEC. We've discussed a lot of these games. A few more to circle are tomorrow night's Mississippi State, Tennessee, Kentucky, Ole Miss game, as well as the LSU-Florida game we already mentioned, Tennessee-Auburn on Saturday, Florida-Kentucky. Lots of good games coming up in this last week here in the SEC. But let's jump right over to the ACC, and I think we have Stalika with us. So, Stalika, as we go to the ACC, first of all, welcome. And second of all, you know, we had some pretty good games this week.
I thought we were going to say tonight. I'm like,
Not tonight. We had a blowout, but what we saw this week was Virginia Tech beating Duke. Then Duke coming back and rolling over Miami, at least by the end of the game there. But what about the top of the ACC, Stalika?
I think the difference here is when we're talking about Duke without Zion Williamson or any of the other injured players, they're still going to be a number one seed caliber team. But when everyone is healthy, look the hell out. But beyond that, Virginia and North Carolina have still been pretty consistent enough that they're still going to be ahead of Duke for the time being, and North Carolina is also going to get a rematch with Duke here towards the end of the week.
And with that coming up, is there a scenario, Tytel, let me ask you this as a selection committee guessing expert, is there a scenario where we may actually have a shot at 3-1 seeds from the ACC?
I was just going to ask Joby that exact question. Yes, I think Virginia and Duke are near locks for a 1 seed, not total locks, but near locks. Carolina beats Duke this weekend and beats one of them, if not both of them, in the ACC tourney. I think it's a real possibility. I don't know if it'll have to have the SEC fall apart or Gonzaga get upset, but a real possibility, I think.
Barring the Zags losing early, I even think the Zags could lose a game and still keep their one. I think the SEC is what blocks that. And I think how Carolina Duke sorts itself out, assuming Virginia takes care of business against Louisville. They do, I think, even a loss early in the ACC tournament, Virginia is still a one. Duke and North Carolina, whether it's the next game or best two out of three, as it turns out, I think they'll determine that final one seed. Duke, I agree with John, has a easier path if both get upset or something like that to keep that one seed.
One of the things Duke has going for it, and this really isn't fair when you look at North Carolina, Virginia, they don't have to play Duke.
That does make the schedule unfair, doesn't it? I guess Virginia also doesn't have to play Virginia. So
yeah, I know. I mean, so
well, and hopefully teams don't play against Virginia what Virginia did tonight. The 18 threes against Syracuse were a school record, not just a Tony Bennett, not just a modern record, were a school record. The team that Virginia had the 18 against before was Gonzaga. Interesting.
When did they play again? I know they played in the tournament once.
It was in the kennel.
Oh, wow.
We've got
that's great.
Virginia had a home and home.
We've got the upcoming schedule of the ACC. Big game tomorrow night is the Virginia Tech at Florida State game. Really looking forward to that one. Those are the other two teams on that next tier of the ACC, but still two very, very good teams.
Fighting for a protected seed, maybe.
Yep. And David, we've got Louisville fresh off of the Boston College loss at Virginia, Duke, Carolina.
Well, they've won a game since then. They did beat another game at home. But, you know, that's just a typical Louisville playing to cement a spot in the top half of the bracket. I think they'll get it even if they lose, and Virginia playing for the one line. I think they'll get it. They won't lose. So I won't go into what's going to happen if they don't lose. But that game Saturday is kind of interesting.
Not the one that's circled, though.
The big, big, well, Bubblicious right there.
Well, actually, what did I tell? Big week for NC State, too. Not playing anybody of note, but they've got to go 2-0, don't they?
Yes. I mean, we've seen that Boston College can ruin people's seasons. But, yes, I think you're right.
Can we look at I know we didn't do like an email of what we wanted to discuss, or if we did, I missed it. But I do not like NC State. The vast majority are projecting them in. I fail to see how. Like, I like them less than Auburn, even though I know they beat Auburn.
Well, they can't really improve their seed line as far as the next two games, but they can certainly destroy it if they lose either one of those two.
Well, yeah, David, if you like to
call that a tier one win,
David, they beat Auburn. You just said you like them less than Auburn. They beat Auburn.
Okay, I know they beat Auburn at home. I still like them less than Auburn.
Well, Tytel, is this an at-large team? You're our committee guessing expert.
As of today, they're in. I have them at the 10 line. They'll certainly fade, like John F. said, if they lose this week. And, man, like, I would hate for that Wake Forest game to keep them out. But if you lose at Wake Forest, I think you might have a good reason to not be in.
I think the bigger reason they get left out, though, is what the committee would say is that 352 non-conference.
Yeah, if you scroll down there and look at this tier four, like had they opted to play Maryland Eastern Shore five times and drop Mercer and Loyola, it still would have been 352. It can't get any worse.
No, Longwood did their duty to get number 353.
They should have just broken the Ten Commandments and just played one or two non-D1 games, and they'd probably be better off.
Yeah.
They did play a lot of non-D1 games. They just played them against D1 teams.
Let's roll over to the what's where I was going, but let's go to the Big Ten Conference now, where we've got now Purdue, Joby, sitting here in sole possession of first place.
Boiler up.
Yeah.
Wow, and you know, and what's funny is Purdue is the forgotten team because we do talk about the Michigan teams over and over, and deservedly so, because Purdue's out of conference. They're a better version than Florida, of what I described to Florida earlier. Yeah, but they got their butts in gear a lot quicker than the Gators, and in a great way. But it's up to the Michigan schools, I think, have a lock on the two seeds right now. But Purdue has a shot. Purdue can't lose Minnesota and Northwestern, but the tournament might actually determine a shot for Purdue if the Big Ten tournament, if one of the losing Michigan team doesn't perform going forward.
Yes, there is a path, though, I think, for a two seed for Purdue, despite seven losses.
It's a little out of their control, unfortunately, for them, though. I do think that it takes the Michigan teams messing up multiple times, which is not out of the consideration, even though Purdue's ahead in the conference in the conference. And Purdue can do it because Purdue can maybe be the team that makes Michigan and Michigan State, you know, look worse because they beat them in the championship game. Yeah, if they do the double, Purdue's probably a two. But that's a tall order. True. I do.
Yeah. A couple of teams I want to – go ahead, David.
I was just going to say we've seen seven lost teams on the two line before, and that profile, if they were to do all of that, I think would warrant it.
Okay. And Michigan State would be a seven loss team at that point as well. And that might be the team that goes out.
Yeah, and Sleek, let me bring in here another team, though. Iowa, real rough week, two losses, including plus they lose their head coach for two games, then get beaten up at home by my Rutgers team, who's now solid possession of ninth seed.
Dad, you need to come clean. Did someone from Rutgers hack into Iowa pregame and play Mr. Trollolo?
They might have. I don't know.
I can't think of any other explanation besides Fran McCaffrey's absence. But by the same token, what if Rutgers had swept Iowa this year? we would be talking about completely different directions, not just for Iowa, but the Scarlet Knights might have actually gotten a few peaks, which would have been the first time in about a decade and a half that we'd be saying that.
Yeah, hey, go two quadrant, one wins to the left there for my Scarlet Knights.
We ever have the Knights up on the profile?
One quadrant, one win. Penn State is not a quad one win.
We've got Steve Peichel bobblehead night coming up here against Penn State, so it's a big week for Rutgers. Yeah. Chance for two more wins here too. But
how about Nebraska 51 right on the bubble?
Okay, let's just go to the next week's schedule in the Big Ten.
Well, wait a minute. Seriously, let's pull up Indiana real quick.
That's a good point. Thank you, David.
Yeah.
I almost did miss that. An Indiana team that we had given up for dead for about five times. What do? They get the sweep over Michigan State on the season, David.
Right. And in looking at them, there's their profile. I'm going to name another bubble team or a couple more. Florida, Auburn, take your pick. Like a P5 bubble team, call one out.
Yeah, any of them.
NC State, just pick one. Because there's something any will suffice. Because
Alabama,
okay, Alabama then.
Okay, I'll put them up on the left.
He has a bunch of bad losses. That's why I'm doing.
Well, what I'm getting at is when you look at the number of games that Indiana has lost, it's a lot. When you look at the number of games they've lost to teams outside the bubble, it's three. And when you look at just about anyone else that's on the bubble, They have as many or more. And the other thing about Indiana, and this is true with Alabama or Florida, I don't know why I'm picking on the SEC, TCU, maybe not Arizona State, their winning percentage against teams in the field is actually a lot higher than a lot of bubble teams. Their problem is that they've just played a really hard schedule. And that realization never occurred to me. I was so shut off by their record that I didn't realize that while they have more losses, a lot more, their percentage against teams in the field is as good or better than most of the rest of the bubble, and that certainly includes the Tide here.
Well, Tytel, let me ask you this question here. If Indiana wins these last two games at Illinois, home to Rutgers, is that enough? I mean, or maybe one win in the Big Ten tournament, is that enough then? Can they get in?
I think so, only because if you're above 500 overall and have all these tier one wins, that's such a strong resume. I'm not convinced they're going to beat Rutgers, which is something I can't believe I'm saying about a team that swept. I mean, am I wrong?
They beat it. Rutgers beat them already. Rutgers has won at Iowa. They've won at Penn State. They have some quality road wins this year. This is a very young Rutgers team. I think we're going to be discussing Rutgers in a much different way next season. That's all I've got to say.
I think so too. I know I said that a year ago, but I really mean it this time.
And I don't remember ever doing that. I haven't done that since I went to Rutgers, because that's how long it's been since they made the tournament, other than an NIT run one year. But upcoming schedule there, Tuesday night, Purdue, Minnesota. We've got Ohio State with a road test Wednesday, big Iowa, Wisconsin game Thursday, lots of big games coming up here, and the huge Michigan State rematch.
That's the big one, baby. I mean, you've got some great games this week, UNC, Duke, Michigan State is right up there. There was a great thing on ESPN. Give me of those four teams, UNC, Duke, Michigan State, pick the one that you feel most confident will win.
But I will also add this, though.
And that's a tough one.
Woe to either Minnesota or Ohio State, who may have to draw Rutgers in the conference tournament, because if the Scarlet Knights win that one, either of those teams could be in serious trouble come Selection Sunday.
And woe to Purdue in the next round, right?
Maybe.
Let's go over to the Big 12, where as we record this right now here, Texas Tech has a halftime lead on Texas, and K-State has a road lead over TCU. We'll get to TCU in a minute here. First, a shout-out to Texas Tech. I did a radio interview with Texas Tech Radio today. You can find it on the website if you want to listen.
Oh, yeah. Right. How'd that go?
Went really well, I thought, with Ryan Hyatt. So quick shout-out to him at Raiderland. Down in Lubbock there. Texas Tech, as we record this, are looking really good in the game against Texas. I think that this is going to be your Big 12 champion. And this was a discussion I had, and I want to throw this to you. Texas Tech wins out. Not only wins these last two regular season games, but also goes through and wins the Big 12 tournament. You're now going to have a team that is going to be sitting at a 12-game winning streak heading into the NCAA tournament. is there a road to a two seed here for the Red Raiders?
I guess. I think that's something that would require other teams falling off big time, just because it seems like there's a lot of teams ahead of them. Obviously, a fantastic resume, so I could see the conversation. But a win at Iowa State, like, even 2 weeks ago would have been very impressive. Now, like, Cyclones falling apart, and, like, Texas, some people on this panel think they shouldn't be in the tournament, which is heresy. I think so. They're going to be less than a two, but I can tell you, I see your argument.
I can play it right now. If they end up, having to win three games, it's possible Kansas State and Kansas may end up being two of those games right there.
Right. And, well, and you got to remember David, that we are talking about Texas Tech, especially if K-State loses over the weekend, this final game, winning the outright Big 12 championship, following that up with a Big 12 tournament championship,
yeah,
in a conference that might put eight out of 10 teams in the field. How can you not be talking two seed?
Well, maybe we'll be talking two seed. I think one of the problems is, like, they're not actually playing any of the teams that they would need to jump over to get up to the one or two line. Whereas, like, we haven't seen a whole lot of movement, and there's nothing really unusual about that, because generally the best teams are the best teams for a reason, and they stay up there. So I guess in order for that to happen, not only would they need to do all of that, but one of the two, somebody up on the two line would need to fall off, and who's that going to be?
And it's the Michigan teams are the biggest,
right?
The biggest candidates, but here's the thing you got to watch out. John Tytel mentioned earlier in this call, what if LSU makes that run?
Mm-hmm. And that's the difference. LSU
could jump
up on the two top two lines, and Texas Tech is it. So if they both make that run, and again, this is all supposing, I'm not predicting that any of this is going to happen, but who do you move up there, Texas Tech or LSU?
LSU will have probably beaten either Tennessee or Kentucky to get there, and that's
right. Yeah.
Okay. We do got to keep things moving here. I want to quickly address, though, TCU. Who is losing right now as we speak. And if we're talking about it being an 8-team Big 12, then TCU's got to get in. And, David, I don't know that they have a path to it if they can't win this game, unless they bounce back with a win at Texas.
Yeah, they'd have to win Texas, which is away from home, and they'd have to win games in the conference tournament, which is away from home. And if there's one thing TCU has not done this year, it's win away from home. They did have that nice showing in the exempt tournament, but that wasn't against – Big 12 teams. And as you said, like, I know that this is sort of crazy, but talking about how Texas Tech didn't have the path to a two line, but this is a really strong conference that's going to put at least five teams in the top half of the bracket, way up in the top half of the bracket. And Texas almost assuredly gets in, I'm pretty sure. And I think Oklahoma is going to get in too.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Oklahoma is there. They did get the win over West Virginia. Now, Oklahoma this week hosts Kansas at Kansas State, TCU.
They beat Nebraska. Yes, they did.
But if you look at these games ahead, though, I mean, almost every one of them is a game to circle here. There is a ton of good games. Although, you know, Sleeker, you're going to be watching West Virginia at Oklahoma State on Saturday.
Yep, all for that pivotal 9 and 10 seeding right there.
Right. Let's jump over to the Big East here real quickly through this.
What a story the Big East has been this year.
We did see the Wednesday night Villanova getting the win over Marquette, but Tytel, let me ask you, beyond Villanova and Marquette, I'm really holding my nose here. Is there another team that's even in? And if so, who do we take?
Can we take anyone who finishes above 500 with the caveat that there's a good chance that nobody finishes above 500?
That's the way to go.
I've been saying for a month that this is a two-bid league, which is no surprise, and I'm glad it bore out that way. Georgetown is getting so much love across the country. I did not attend their win over Villanova or their double OT win over Seton Hall, so yes, I'm the jinx, apparently. They're playing decent teams and good teams in Villanova's case and winning, so they do get credit for that. I have no belief in them that they're going to beat Marquette in the regular season finale and then again in the conference tourney semis, which they might have to do. I mean, if somebody thinks that this Georgetown team can beat Marquette twice in 2 weeks, please speak up. I'm not thinking that.
Yeah, and Joby, another team, though.
I think they're in right now.
What about – you look at the St. John's. Sweet Marquette gets swept by Providence. I mean – two bad sweeps in conference, yet you have 3 out of 4 wins against Marquette and Villanova.
And that's what – and a good VCU win on a neutral court. That's out of conference. St. John's is still in right now. Okay. It's probably going to take them to lose to both X and the first round of the Big East tournament. Then we can talk. And even then, who knows what the bubble looks like, and they might still be in. Mm-hmm. St. John's is in, and they're not first four playing in. They are in, not wearing white, but they are in that 9-10 range. It takes a lot to move you seed lines at this stage. I think St. John's is okay, but they could certainly, I mean, they're so inconsistent. The Pons is dynamite, and that's in a good way and bad way. They could be out, but they right now just win one of their final next two games, and I think they're in.
Right, and I agree with that. But, you know, and a couple other teams note, Seton Hall, you mentioned with those losses, David, huge week hosting Marquette and Villanova. They need wins.
Yeah, they do. And again, like the Johnnies, a really schizophrenic profile, a real schizophrenic season. They're one of about 6 or 7 teams that are just really hard to place. And not only are they hard to play, I mean, Baylor is schizophrenic in the sense that there was bad in November and December, but a lot of good now, and you kind of know what you're getting with them. Like with Seton Hall, St. John's, Arizona State, Texas, you never know what's going to happen when they take the court. Would it really shock you if Texas won this game by 20? They're down 11 right now, but who knows? It's Texas. You just never know.
Salik, I got to give you 3 seconds on Xavier.
That's a good team.
At Butler hosting the Johnnies.
Yeah, Butler is in pretty deep trouble after their week, and Xavier could probably put out the lights on Butler, at least as far as their NCAA tournament chances should they win. But by the same token, if Butler and DePaul win at least one game, every single team in the Big East is going to be at least 500 going into Madison Square Garden. When is the last time, if ever, we've had a major conference have all teams above 500 overall going into a conference tournament?
They would only be 8-10.
No, overall record.
Overall. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah. How close is Xavier getting to our selection committee guessing expert?
Titel?
They're getting damn close. I mean, they're sweeping teams who are in the tournament. I like their chances against St. John's because this is a classic two teams going in opposite directions. If you sweep St. John's and you have Villanova, I mean, that's a lot of Tier 1 and Tier 2 stuff. Hard to excuse, like, San Diego State and 3 Tier 3 losses, but I get it. Going in the right direction. They need to do more work. I think they might – no, they do need to beat Marquette or Villanova, at least one, if not both of them. And obviously that's going to have to happen in the tourney because it's not happening in the regular season. But it could happen.
I'm going to follow up on what Joby said earlier. We have Purdue, who started winning earlier in the year. We had Florida, who started about early February. Where does Xavier fall? Into late February?
March. Exactly. Well, and what's interesting is, and it's not all being, but the J&G, after the Utah State Furman showdown that I have right now for the last team in, the next 3 teams out are all Big East teams that include, at the back of that line, this Xavier team. And yes, Titel, the Georgetown team you mentioned, as well as Creighton. Yes.
Oh,
let's move to a conference that plays that has some ties to the old ties to the Big East and may put more teams in the Big East in the tournament this year. The American Titel, off of UCF's huge win at Houston over the weekend.
I'm telling you, this one I'm going to take pride in. So I called it a week or two ago that my outline for how this conference is getting 5 teams in. So Houston and Cincy are locks. UCF is a near lock after winning at Houston, which nobody does. Temple is hanging on for dear life, but obviously if you have to beat Tulane, which they did. And if any of the other teams, which I thought was going to be South Florida but might be Memphis, I don't think it's going to be Tulsa, wins the conference tourney and Temple can beat Houston or Cincinnati, like I'm telling you, this conference can get 5 teams in. It's not going to happen, but it can happen.
Hey, how about the red-hot Wichita State Shockers also? They are a hot team, actually.
Yeah, they have come on really strong, and I don't expect to see Wichita this irrelevant very often.
No, and who knows? They could be the team that makes a surprise run to that 3:30 start on Sunday American Championship game and drive all the bracketologists nuts with having to come up with multiple
brackets. The committee won't care. They'll have contingencies. Right.
Upcoming schedule, though, in the American for this final week of the season, along with the Big Ten, this conference does not actually end until Sunday. Everybody else will end by Saturday, but Houston, Cincinnati on Sunday is the big one to circle. But before that, Cincinnati UCF Thursday night, so two big games for the Bearcats there. Let's move over to the Mountain West, where we saw Joby. I'm not going to go to you now. I was going.
Go to Joby. What are your thoughts on the Mountain West?
Utah State gets the win over Nevada. Some ugly scenes afterwards with some shenanigans in the handshake line and some issues with fans and the storming and all that. But let's forget about that for now. But what about this Utah State team? Sleeka, let me bring you in. What about the Utah State team now that they picked up not only the San Diego State win, but the huge, huge home win over Nevada?
It does give them a bit of a pathway as far as an at-large, but at the same time, they can't really add to their profile any further until they get to the Mountain West tournament, where they would probably have to go through Nevada a third time, assuming there's no upsets. But
and then they're in.
Yep. Of course, depending on how their pathway goes, they'll have to go through either Fresno State or San Diego State, none of which are going to be an easy out in that conference tournament.
Right. And Utah State, only one game left. That's tomorrow night at Colorado State. Titel Nevada's got two games left at Air Force, and then then rematch with another game against San Diego State. They got to win those two, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, this Utah State team, just to keep going on them, is a great story. They started 1-2 in conference play. Granted, they played two of the best teams in Nevada and Fresno State, but they've been red hot since then, obviously, winning 13-14. The only loss at the Aztecs, which is a very tough place to play. They should take care of Colorado State on Tuesday. I don't know exactly where they are at large wise. I'll defer to Joby on that, but it's a freaking great resume.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Joby, where are they at large wise?
The resume, and I'm sorry, maybe I'm biased because I'll admit I've only seen Utah State play about 5 or 6 times. Every time I watch them play, they look like ass.
Joby, they are a defense.
They didn't look good at Nevada. That was just a poorly played game.
Joby, Utah State is one of those teams that plays a lot of defense, so you should actually like them.
I saw bad defense. That is actually
– you know where this is going. Utah State's knocking Virginia out in the round of 32. That's where it's going to happen.
People were missing open shots. I know. We're going to play Utah State. Well, it takes a lot. But, this team just isn't very good. And, no, that resume isn't that good. Sorry, you have one win against a tournament at-large team. Yes, well, UC Irvine is a good team outside in a road win. St. Mary's isn't that great this year. Don't give me that tier one.
No, I'm not. But three. Nevada at home, at Irvine, at Fresno. I think that those are all three pretty good wins.
All right, well, let's keep things moving here. I want to talk about the upset of the season, maybe the upset of the century. Titel, Washington loses to one of the most pathetic Pac-12 teams I've ever seen in my lifetime. Who then follows up with a win of Washington State. So now we got the two-game winning streak for the Cal Golden Bears.
I mean, Cal taking a page out of the Xavier handbook and getting hot in late February and early March. Who'd have thunk it? It was really – we can go past century because it was that big an upset. I think if they play them 100 times, they lose 99. They just caught them somehow, and it's inexplicable. And I don't know what happens, if Cal plays Washington next week in the conference tourney.
David, look at this. After the game and after Cal also beats Washington State, there's still over 200 points difference in net between these two teams.
Yeah.
That is ridiculous.
It is. It's one of only two games. You typically get one sometimes. I don't remember a year where there's been two. The other game was Stephen F. Austin beating Baylor. That's the only other result where the winning team was 200 spots below the losing team. So this was a as far as how far apart they were in the rankings, this was almost twice as big as UMBC over Virginia. It was just a stupefying result. And how much does this – this is like an anvil going through the hull of Washington's ship It just sunk them to the point where
does it sink them, but it also hurts the rest of the conference, especially the team that beat them, Joby. Arizona State, they did come back with a win over Oregon State, but they lost to Oregon, and that Washington win is now a tier two win.
Yeah, I think Arizona State's actually in better shape than Washington in a lot of ways, because Arizona State can hang their hat on Mississippi State, Kansas State. Everybody loves Utah State so much.
I cannot get past Utah, Vanderbilt, Princeton, Washington State.
And it's good. I think good outweighs bad in that balancing, of scales. And Arizona State, if you think Arizona State's in the field right now, you're likely to feel like they should be in the field as long as they don't – they could probably even lose to Arizona and probably still scrape in as long as they perform in the Pac-12 tournament. They can't lose to Stanford or Cal, Washington State in the first round. But I think Arizona State has something to hang their hat on. Washington is in more of a danger territory here. They'll get the regular season title, which will mean something. But then you cannot lose these games if you're Washington. You cannot lose Oregon to Oregon
schools,
State.
Oregon.
And then in the Pac-12 tournament, because you don't have heft in wins to back you up. If you're sitting at 8 losses, 9 losses, and don't win the conference tournament, you are in trouble. And I'm dead serious on that. You are in trouble with that.
I like Utah State more than Washington.
Well, other than the two Washington games, Titel, I got to give you a couple seconds here on Arizona State at Arizona Saturday, probably the most important game in the Pac-12 this week.
This week? This century, my friend.
Oh, okay, okay.
No, rematch of the overtime classic in Tempe a month ago, and I don't love our chances just because our offense is horrible. The fact that it is a territorial cup matchup means that, in my experience, usually the worst team wins to ruin the better team season. So I'm hanging my hat on that. And what's funny is they could meet again in, the conference tourney quarters, perhaps, next week. So we could be seeing a lot of Bobby Hurley. And if only we had a screenshot of him taking a ball to the face, that would be
perfect. Do we have it?
Don't have it tonight. I'm sorry.
Oh. This is the conference of cannibalization right here, because 3 through 10, you have a game and a half difference separating everybody. So who knows what order we're going to be seeing next week.
But it's crap beats crap. So it's not like – it's like, huh, so what?
I'll tell you what. Let's Sleeka, let me bring it up here. I just put the A-10 standings up there on the screen. VCU continuing to roll in this conference.
VCU is continuing to roll, and a team like Dayton, who might have been an at-large candidate, all but took themselves out of the running with a home loss against Rhode Island on Friday. So not a good look for the Flyers there, but by the same time, Davidson, they did hold on to beat Fordham, but
no.
Losing at LaSalle, that's a deal breaker.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a one-bid league short of VCU losing in the conference tournament. And David, I think we still did got to see VCU pick up these last couple regular season wins at George Mason, home to St. Joe's.
Mm-hmm.
And they survived the Richmond game, which, believe it or not, they have not in the past. So that's a big hometown rivalry that, VCU got through. That's a big deal.
So we talk a little bit Gonzaga here, I guess. Titel, they had the big, huge game at St. Mary's. This was going to be the game for St. Mary's to prove they were an NCAA quality tournament team. St. Mary's proved something, didn't they?
They proved that Gonzaga is one of the best teams we've seen in a long time. There has not been a team in almost 30 years to win every single conference game by double digits. You have to go back to the legendary 1991 UNLV Runnin' Rebels. This is total domination.
Well, they still have two more games to go, because that Rebels team did win the conference tournament by double digits also, and I should be coming right up here. There's the West Coast Conference tournament bracket, actually.
Holy, what a monstrosity that is.
Big old five-level ladder system here. The Zags, San Fran, and then likely St. Mary's, though, is probably their road.
Go San Diego.
Um, Okay, we could have done a little better with this. Seriously, just I mean, you have give double buys to the top two teams, and then just have everybody else play tournaments of four for the other two semifinals.
Yeah, it's a crazy, strange bracket. Let's go ahead and pull that back down here for a second and talk about a couple other teams real quickly. Still in the top 25, Stalika. I'm going to pull up here. Buffalo on the left, still with two games left in their regular season.
Yeah, Buffalo is another team that's been red hot since January when they had a couple slip-ups in the MAC against Northern Illinois and Bowling Green. But so far, they have not missed a beat in their last seven games, and they should get probably a trouncing at Ohio. But Bowling Green, that could be a little bit interesting, but I think the Bulls are actually going to win that one considerably as well.
Yeah, they've been looking really good the last week here. And David, a team that was very impressive this week, the Wofford Terriers, right, winning their last two regular season games. It was at Chattanooga, at Samford, but, you know, could have been trap games, and they just rolled through them.
They did roll, and I don't really think of these two teams as being on the bubble. I don't think Wofford, even if they lose the quarterfinal game, is going to fall five seed lines because of it, because they lost to a team that they've already beaten twice. I just don't think they should be punished that much for that. I know Buffalo has a little more left to play going into the conference tournament, so the possibility is there that if they go into the tank, they could fall pretty hard. But these aren't even bubble teams. Not even Titel. I think Titel had them both in the top half of his bracket.
Is that what you had, Wofford, Titel?
As of today, I think I have Buffalo at 6 and Wofford 7, and yesterday I had him at 6 and 8. So, yeah, I think David is on the money that even a terrible Tier 5 loss in the opener, in the playoffs, in the conference tournament will not ruin their seasons.
I don't see a way they lose to VMI or Western Carolina. It is going to be interesting when you get to the semifinals of this tournament, though, Joey. East Tennessee State.
This is a good top half. I mean, question here is, can Furman or UNC Greensboro do something against the other? Is a win against the other and a loss to Wofford, does that get them into the discussion? It might for Furman, because Furman can hang on to a Villanova road win, whereas UNC Greensboro just has had a good season, but nothing that jumps out to maybe the committee. Who knows? We'll see. I've been a big SOCOM believer, as people who've been watching this podcast for a long time this year.
Yeah.
We're going to see.
I was going to say, I wish Rocco were here to lobby for it, but could we see a three-team SoCon if East Tennessee is actually able to beat either Furman or Greensboro in the championship game?
I think that if there is a way, I think if Stalika would have to be Furman in the championship game. I don't know that would really happen, but it would have to be coming from East Tennessee State knocking off Wofford and then winning the championship. I think you're right in that respect, but I think it's going to be a stretch, because you've got to remember East Tennessee State would then be a bid thief, and somebody who's at the very bottom of the bubble falls out, which might be Furman, is that team they knock out.
So, or it could be Utah State.
Let's go to the
chat. Can I ask a real quick question? Okay. Just a straw poll here. I know that we're all on the mock committee. If we were doing the first ballots today, would Wofford and Buffalo be in yours? I'll admit that they would be in mine.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I would say yes, and I would also say I'm only going to vote 32 teams the way this is shaping up this year.
I may vote about five teams the way this is shaping up this year. But let's take a look at it. Let's go to the Championship Week video notebook portion of our show, and the Atlantic Sun quarterfinal day today. It was kind of disappointing in terms of close games, other than that NJIT Florida Gulf Coast game, which was a blowout, then got close, then it was a blowout again, and then got close at the very end. It was a real yo-yo type of game there. But at the end of the day, other than NJIT winning at Gulf Coast, form held here in fairly convincing fashion, though.
Yeah, Lipscomb kind of played around with Kennesaw a little more than you would have thought.
Who was without Al Skinner, by the way.
Who was without Al Skinner, which may explain why Kennesaw was able to stay in it as well as they did. at no point were they ever really in any danger of losing the game, but at some points you just figured, oh man, don't slip up now. They haven't quite been themselves the last several. Like three or four times I'd watched them play compared to what they looked like for much of the year, particularly that game at Liberty and, of course, the games at TCU and even some of their losing efforts out of conference at Louisville and places like that. But I don't know if that's just them having off nights or being bored with their season or what, but this team is built to win a game in the round of 64 if they get the right matchup and if they get there.
If you want to talk about teams getting bored, there was Liberty, who got off to an 11-2 start against Jacksonville in the first 4 minutes. They only scored 4 points for the next 10 minutes, but I think there was a flagrant two on Jacksonville that ended up changing the momentum of that game.
Actually, Tyrese Davis, who's their third leading scorer, didn't even play in that game. And then their starting center, David Beck, got ejected on a flagrant two at about that point, and that was it for the Dolphins tonight. They had nothing left after that. I know they actually made a couple little runs in the second half, but it was not much. Tytel, actually, you said that North Alabama was playing with house money there, might have had a shot. They actually were in that game with North Florida most of the way.
It is. What's interesting for North Florida is they've beaten Liberty in the past 2 weeks, so I guess there's a chance. What's interesting for Liberty, their only two losses in conference play, the 3 seed who they have Thursday, and possibly the 1 seed who they'll have on Sunday. The revenge tour begins.
Yeah, it should be an interesting game. There's a mistake on the screen there, by the way. It's an 8 o'clock, not a 7 o'clock start for the NJIT Lipscomb game. It's being played in the Central Time Zone, not the Eastern. But Joby, predictions for Thursday night's games?
I would go right now with the favorites because I do like Lipscomb is the best team, I think, in this conference, and Liberty has shown by tying Lipscomb that they're playing – very efficiently, very effectively in taking care of business. It's boring. It's chalk, but 1-2 I see.
Okay. Tomorrow night, Tuesday night, we have three new conferences starting play. First of all, in the Big South, it is first round day in the Big South on
first
campus
round
sites.
Day in the Big South.
Longwood at Hampton, Asheville at Presbyterian, Upstate at Charleston Southern. David, how intently are you watching these games?
Fairly.
Okay.
Not very.
Let's go to the real question, Tytel. Who wins this conference tournament? Because I think it's going to be a fun one once we get to especially to the semifinal round.
So as much as I want to pick Campbell, because who doesn't love Chris Clemens and who doesn't want to see him play against Mike Dom, I just don't think this is their year because they've never, ever, ever won it. I think I had Radford as the winner of this one. The Highlanders are the defending champs, and they have a good draw. And I think I went with Radford.
Salika, you agree with that? Radford is the pick?
I think the Fighting Kelseys are a dangerous matchup in the semifinals for Radford, but I agree with Tytel in that I think the Highlanders for Radford ultimately do win the conference, even on Campbell's home court.
Campbell does have one NCAA tournament appearance, won the Big South tournament back in 1992, by the way. Just a little.
Yeah.
Way, way back, though.
Right. I like Campbell. I think that Radford's got a tougher path to the championship, and especially if – I know that they clear the arena, I think, but the crowd will not be with them.
That's actually the early session, the Radford games. That's the noon and the 2:30 session.
I'm at the semis.
Oh, the semifinals. Okay, the semifinals. Yeah, Radford is the 6 o'clock game for it's the early
that game. That Winthrop would be fun. This is going to be a good tournament.
Right. David, you got any upsets in these three tomorrow or just
on campus sites? Longwood over Hampton, but I wouldn't call that an upset.
All right. It is also first round day. Joby, it's first round day in the Patriot League, which is a fun tournament. Loyola at BU, Holy Cross at Lafayette.
I am, and I'll just say the top three in this conference. BU, Loyola, Lafayette, Holy Cross. I'm surprised Holy Cross fell to 10, to be very honest. Usually they have a better program than
that. They win this tournament when they're the 10 seed, though. So.
Yeah. But the Patriot as a whole is sneaky. Colgate, Bucknell, Lehigh, I think one of the three will be what come out of this. And the winner could be slated as the best 16 seed. Oh, please don't go to Columbia, South Carolina.
I think there'll be enough upsets in the conference tournaments, Joby. Yeah. I think you're looking at a 15 line for this winner, not the 16. But
you're right because of bid thieves and other conferences. But if you look straight right now, you know, if the winners went out, if you know it's a Radford, for instance, you know who actually is higher net than Campbell. If the winners went out and you went purely by net, this is where the best 16 comes. But sure. if Winthrop wins, you know, out of the Big South, as we talk, yes.
Okay. Well, quickly, Tytel, your pick to win this conference tournament?
An alum, Mount Langla, Colgate, of course.
Colgate, all right. Stilica.
I'm still going to go with Bucknell because they seem to have more favorable matchups on their half of the bracket. And there's no guarantee Colgate's going to make the title game either.
I think they've got the Colgate has the easier pass there. I'm not that impressed with American or Navy so much this year. I think at the bottom half of the bracket, Army might be a dangerous team to keep for Lehigh even in the first round.
Lehigh is good.
Tomorrow night, I'm not really picking any upsets, although, you know, we always love watching games at BU up on the roof there.
Yeah.
One more conference starting tomorrow night. Two out of the four quarterfinals will be Tuesday night in the Horizon League. The 1-8 game between IUPUI at Wright State and the 4-5 game Illinois-Chicago at Green Bay. Sleeka, let me start with you. First of all, tomorrow night's games, either one is going to be an upset.
IUPUI might be capable of knocking off Wright State, although this is going to be harder to do with the Nutter Center this year. But I know they don't want to face Illinois-Chicago because they've actually lost to the Flames twice this year.
They barely beat IUPUI at home earlier in the year. So, I mean, I know that this is a big wild card tournament. And, you know, if history repeats itself, the eight is going to at least the championship.
They got rid of the 9 and the 10 seeds even being in this tournament because the last 2 years they've made the finals.
I mean, that's how crazy this
tournament has been in recent years. Titelli, who's your pick to win this whole thing here?
Ordinarily, it would be Wright State, but one of my favorite stats from my conference tourney preview, 6 of the past 8 Horizon champs were not a 1 seed. Northern Kentucky is the pick. Go Norse.
Northern Kentucky, but they got an interesting first round matchup against Detroit. Antoine Davis, who was, I believe, was your conference player of the year this year.
Well, it's not like this tournament is in Detroit. Oh.
The first quarterfinals are on campus site, so that game will actually be in
They just have to beat Detroit to get into Detroit this year.
Yeah, they got to beat Detroit
to go to Detroit. Joby, you got to pick for the conference tournament?
Yeah, Northern Kentucky's still bitter about the selection process right now for this tournament.
Yes.
That's the best story here. I will just go ahead and reach down and say history continues. IUPUI.
To win it all, go for it.
Yeah. How that's about this my pick as well, and I have them beating the Norse in the championship. If you're going to cross the line, just long jump over it.
Well, Youngstown State put together that big winning streak. They lost their last couple games, so keep an eye on them also, maybe. It's going to be a fun game. Fun day. Maybe even Thursday's night.
This is going to be a fun tournament.
I'm sorry. Wednesday night's games may be fun there with that Oakland, Youngstown, Detroit, NKU games. This may be all four games might be fun in the quarter. So
yeah,
keep an eye on those two games tomorrow night, definitely. Survival board time. David, what is the survival board?
Oh, well, it is a tool that the selection committee is able to use, and it basically shows them all of the teams that are still playing. And, basically if you're on this board, the committee needs to be watching them. If they're bolded, they need to take them. If they're in italics, they need to consider them. Really, if they're just in regular type, and that's vast majority, you don't have to worry about them unless they win the conference tournament. But it's everybody that's still playing, everybody that could still make the NCAA tournament, and in theory, still make the Final Four and win it all.
Right, and it's right up there on the website. You can click on it. We also have the conference tournament tab up there, by the way, where you can see all those brackets that we were just looking at. But here we were. Heading into the day today, there were 334 teams left. There were 4 elimination games today, although North Alabama had already been eliminated.
Yeah.
So we lost 3 teams, and if we did things right, 331 teams remain.
Yeah, and as you can see, scrolling down to the A-Sun there, I think there's only 4.
Only 4 left?
Only 4 left, yeah.
Lipscomb in italics. That means that maybe they even get some consideration if they lose that championship.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I think they do.
On that note, let me pull this down here. David, you have something else you want to just address?
Well, yeah, one of the things that we have doing all through championship week is part of the video notebook. This one's a little unique because it's part of the Hoops HD report too, is we are coming up with things that we're coming up with ways to either to make college basketball better or to fix things that are wrong with college basketball. Last night, Chad talked about replay, and that is a good issue. I'm glad we let off with that one because that's probably the part that's bothering me the most. When the referees stop the game for 2 and 3 and 5 minutes, multiple times during the game to go watch television. That's more disruptive than even a bad call would be. But Chad, what, like, the person that you reached out to for help was Bryce Harper. That may have been the dumbest person.
He must have been busy with spring training today. He did not get a chance to respond to us. So maybe tomorrow. Well,
tonight, I've got another issue, and this is more about preserving college basketball than anything else. I'm afraid that we're going to go to quarters. I don't want it. Quarters are moronic. We do not need to count down to how much time until the half is half over. Like I've always said, here's the screen share. This is like Kyle Lamb, our friend, is in favor of quarters. And this is essentially what quarters do to James Naismith. If you can see that on the screen there.
Yes.
And he's a man urinating. So anyway, like, we don't want that. I would like to reach out to somebody that I think that could help. And the person that comes to my mind is singer-songwriter Willie Nelson. I have tweeted to him, or am going to, like, the NIT Expander Rule Rules have concerned college basketball and go to quarters instead of halves. This is an outrage. We do not need to count down until the half is off order. We need to cover as I figured you could help us. So I am going to send that.
Go ahead. Send your tweet to Willie Nelson.
Yeah, there it is. And it is away.
All right. We'll look for a response from Willie to fix things tomorrow. But on that, let's go to some quick final thoughts here. Sleek, let me start with you.
I know we brought it up earlier that if you thought it was ugly on the court between Utah State and Nevada, it only got a little bit worse as far as what happened post-game with Utah State and Nevada apparently having some choice words and the handshake lines. And then if you saw the video post-game between Jordan Caroline, he is damn lucky he did not injure himself after punching out the fire extinguisher glass.
Yeah, it was a scene there. There may be suspensions or issues being dealt with by the teams. The conference is not going to get involved, was the news I heard today. Joby, you're up next.
Well, mamas, don't let your babies play quarters, you know. it's going to be a lot of fun coming down the stretch. As people look at those top seeds, we hit it in the show, but once again, look at these in terms of conference. Take Gonzaga out. Assume they went out. Assume that won. That means for those top two seeds, you've got 8 spots. Right now, the fights are among a group of Big Ten teams, a pair of SEC teams, and a group and a trio of ACC teams. They have kind of a lockdown with Marquette, especially with Marquette's loss this week. It's interesting that 3 conferences are dominating. You know, not 5, not 6, like we talk about the Power 5, et cetera. 3 conferences are dominating the top part of the bracket. Is that, beyond Gonzaga, is that where we see our national champion from? There does seem to be a gap after those group of teams. It'll be interesting how this all plays out.
It will be interesting. It's going to be a fun last couple of weeks. Tytel.
So I thought that the key to beating a mid-major team is just limiting their 1 or 2 good players. And Lipscomb proved tonight that that's not the case. Obviously, Kennesaw State is not an NCAA tourney caliber team. But the fact is, with a conference tourney player of the year like Garrison Matthews and then the big man Rob Marbury, I thought if you could stop one or both of those guys, then that's the way to beat the Bison. Au contraire, my friends. Kenny Cooper, their 6-foot point guard, with a triple-double tonight, 15, 10, and 10. How is a 6-foot point guard getting 10 rebounds, even if it's against the Kennesaw States of the world? I'm telling you, if this team is a 12 seed, you better give them a long, hard look at the 5-12 upset in a couple weeks.
Yeah, well, we'll see how they do against NJIT on Thursday. I think it's going to be a little different game then, because as you said, this was Kennesaw. David, let me let you finish things off. But, yeah, congrats on a great game tonight.
It seems like, again, another unspectacular start to championship week. It always takes a little while to get going. Not a whole lot of excitement tonight, but keep in mind, like, the excitement builds, because as you get into the later rounds, you get more and more exciting games. So it may take a couple days to get going, but it will be awesome.
Yeah, tonight was having 4 games that did not really come down to the wire was not what we're going to see. We're going to see a lot of buzzer beaters, a lot of great games. And it's always a little bit slow this first game or 2, absolutely.
Yeah.
But on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us. We'll be back again tomorrow, Tuesday evening, with another with Willie Nelson's response, as well as another video notebook. We'll have one every night from here on out, all the way through the night before Selection Sunday. We'll also be doing a bracket rundown show later this week. But on behalf of Joby Fortson, John Stalik, David Griggs, John Titel, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you again real soon.